The sun has left and forgotten me. It's dark, I cannot.
Your stories don't define you, but how you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief storymaker at Elkins Consulting. And by chief storymaker, I mean a person who steps out of her comfort zone pretty regularly, because it's really hard to be a great storyteller if you're not making the stories and recognizing the moments in your life that are the stories that you can share later on. And today's guest is definitely a story maker, and you're going to love how she chose to make the story that she's going to share with you later on in our conversation. Amy Daughters, it's such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for joining me on this podcast episode.
Well, I'm so excited, Sarah. I'm honored to be on. So thank you so much.
Yes, well, absolutely. Once I read your bio and some of what you've done in the last few years, I was compelled to reach out and have this conversation, partly because I'm such a believer in what you're doing. I don't always do it, but I've been reading a lot about the impact of writing things down with your hand and not typing. And I have a dear friend that is a big proponent of what you've done over the last few years. So rather than be all weird about what you do, what you've done, and where your book came from and all that, let's start with the beginning of the question that I love to ask my guests is to share something about themselves that most people might not know about them. And I think you already have something in your head for that question. Are you ready for that?
Sure, I'm ready for it.
Great.
So, one thing that people don't know about me is that when I was a little kid, I collected baseball cards and I was obsessed with statistics. And I would when my parents would go to bed, because it was 9, I would sit up on my bathroom floor and organize the cards by statistics. And I was fascinated with baseball statistics. And I didn't know that later I would, that kind of foreshadowed something, that happened later in my adult life. But most people don't know that my love of sports and numbers started I was literally 7 years old on the bathroom floor. Dad, what's an RBI? And then once I figured it out, I was oh, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sort these cards by that, So
wow.
The little me would be embarrassed with our sharing, but I'll go ahead and share that. So
no, there's nothing embarrassing about that. And you're right. I mean, why would anyone know that? And I'm not surprised by it, just because of how you went about reconnecting with people when you felt disconnected. So let's tell the story of what you did without telling the story of what you did. Let's start with the first time you realized that what you wanted to do was reconnect with the people in your life that you felt disconnected from them. What was the very first one?
Oh, the very first person I reconnected with? Yeah, well, I reconnected with, I like to tell this part of the story where I was minding my own business. And, I'm on Facebook like a lot of other people. I'm not saying everyone unilaterally, but I think social media is something that we can all relate to in some way, whether we're observing or participating. Well, I was minding my own business and I was thinking, I worked at a summer camp. I grew up at a summer camp and have all these connections from the summer camp. Well, there was this one girl whose name always kicked around my head. I was like, whatever happened to Dana? Because Dana was this loud girl who was my loud girl friend, because loud girls stick together,
right.
or don't like each other, one of the two. But anyway, we probably spent 6 weeks together in the 1980s being camp counselors. And I don't even really have any lucid memories except for we were funny and loud and we liked each other. And I had always been like, well, so what happened to her? And so one day, like everyone else, I'm like, oh, her name came to my head, was on Facebook. So I typed her name in and there she was. And I friend requested her and she accepted. And it's hilarious about modern day relationships, because who knows what, and who knows if she even remembers me. And it was super weird because, camp summer camp relationships, it's like college or other things, you always are hooked to mutual people. That's one of the things, because we're all connected in some way. Well, me and Dana had zero mutual connections, which is super rare, you know? So I was like, does she even remember me? But so then I went and did what we all do next. And I was like, oh my God, her hair changed. Wait, she's got a bunch of kids. Wait, she lives here. Wait. So I stalked, you know, I did the stalking.
Like, the Google stalking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Facebook
and
stalking.
Yeah. I wandered through her pictures and her life, and I spent a delightful 15 minutes with this person who I was never talk to or see again. And that's the moment when when things shifted for me. That was when my whole life story pivoted, was on that really like completely regular life event of stalking, looking someone up, looking at all their stuff, and then moving on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do?
Well, what I did was I looked at her page, and then I realized right away that a lot of her content had to do with the fact that she had all these kids. She had five kids. So she had like overachieved in life, like, you know, and kids, like I have two. So I was like in the amateur hour. But I found out she had four daughters and one son, and the son was the youngest. His name's Parker. And right away I found out that Parker was at St. Jude in Memphis. And so he was fighting cancer. You know, likely fighting for his life. And so as a mom, as a human being, as a person, I immediately became engaged in this story. And so the first thing I did was nothing. She asked for people to pray. So I kind of prayed. I was in the background, but I started watching and I could kind of feel myself overfeeling it, you know, like you don't really know her. Like, so, but you don't tell anybody that when you're online, like you're not sharing that, like I'm not acting on that. So who cares? And so I really started kind of following along to the point where I started looking for information, because here's this kid. I'm the mother of two sons. She's the mother of this one son and the four daughters. So I thought it was just that. I was just being engaged, you know. And then so Parker fights through cancer. She's a big, like, very honest, like, sharer. So she's sharing all this. And I think
super
a lot of
vulnerable.
People. Yeah, super vulnerable people. And I think a lot of people were engaged and brought into the story just like I was. Only I didn't like anything. Like, I didn't physically do anything. I just watched. And so then he went back home. This was like 2014. And then at the end of that year, towards the fall, you could tell something was up. And then finally she shared this long, very hard post. It was like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, the worst news we could have gotten, but we're here for it. We're going to go fight it. We're going back to St. Jude because the cancer's back. And I was like, oh man. And so then, like, I'm thinking about it and I pray about it, but everybody can frame this like faith-based, however they want to frame it. But I was thinking about it and praying about it. And I was like, all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, like a bolt of lightning. I was like, you know what I'll do? Cause I do a lot of words for what I do. And I was like, I'll start writing them letters and I'll start sending them to the Ronald McDonald House in Memphis. Like, that's totally crazy. So that's the moment I wanted to reconnect with someone, because I felt like I got to do something. And I think as human beings, it's a completely valid response. I got to do something for Dana, who I don't even know.
Right.
And so
we feel so helpless when we see a story like that. Right.
Right. And I had been over, you know, course of a year or more, that felt like I was involved even though I wasn't in the story. So I came really invested in this. So I was like, every Sunday I'll write them a letter. So I started writing Dana and Parker these letters. And I'd had no contact with her in 30 years. Like, we did life completely separate. I'd never met Parker. I hadn't written a letter to anyone in decades. And it was so non-intentional on my part. I was just going to do it because that's kind of who I am, you know? And so I just start writing these letters once a week. I start writing them. And then the letters get longer because I'm like, what do I say? You know, I'm thinking of you, I'm supporting of you, you know, blah, blah, blah. Here's my life. It's boring, but, you know, you're welcome to it. And then about 8 weeks into writing the two of them, you see the posts again begin to shift, like tick, 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 like this isn't good. And so the new year comes, and then I come home one Sunday and there's this like really tough post. Not tough. I mean, there's no words for this. Like, Parker's passed away. Right. Parker's
God.
He passes away. He's 15 years old. And I, again, overfeeling it, like, as a human being. Yeah, I weep. I cry. And my people are like, you never cry, Mom. Why are you crying? I'm like, no, Parker, you know, and this is not my story to tell, which is what makes my story difficult to tell, because part of it I have no business telling. But I sat down. I was like, so I went and bought a condolence card. I mailed it. And I was like, what do I do? Not that it had anything to do with me, but I still felt like there was something I was supposed to do. And so I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just, unless I level crazy too in the story, I'm going to just keep writing her letters. Only now, you know, Sarah, like, where does she even live? Because this is Facebook, right? Like, I think
Right,
she lives
right.
in Louisiana, but I'm not really sure because I have really been paying attention to the deets on this. And so I stalk her husband's office address, and I just keep writing her there because I just feel so compelled and driven to write this random woman letters. So for 4 months, I write her letters. And then she eventually sends me her home address and tells me what the letter means. But then just out of nowhere, I go to my mailbox. And there's a letter from her. It's like a 6-page letter. And
Oh, I just got a chill.
and she's like, here's, and then she shares some like stuff about her grief. And then so I write her and she writes me back. I write her and she writes back for 2 years. This is how it works. We don't text. We don't phone call. Like, I didn't even have her email address. I don't know what she believes politically. I have no idea what her religious, I don't know what her more, I don't know anything except for we went to camp together in 1986. She starts sharing about her grief, and I found out in retrospect she didn't want to bring the room down at home. And so she would tell me all the stuff that she didn't want to tell anybody else. And I started reordering my life from the outside in because I was like, here's the deal with my kids and my marriage. And we shared way too much. Like, I knew I was so vulnerable to her because I'd like given her all the deets. I trusted her. She trusted me. She would write stuff like, here's the deal with so and such one of her kids. I know I can trust you. Like, how could she trust me? Like, we didn't even know anything about each other, but it was profound. We had this super intimate relationship where we cared about each other and trusted about each other, despite not really knowing each other. That I sat back after about 6 months of this and I was like, man, if this can happen from this one literally random girl, like, what else is out there on this list of people, human beings that have all this real stuff going on? So I went completely bananagrams, like, did a spreadsheet, put everybody's names on it, shoved it in a box, bought stationery, and I was like, I'm going to write all these people a letter. And I never really thought I was going to seriously finish, but in 18 months, Sarah, it blew up my life to the point that I want to sit around and talk about this for the rest of my life. I mean, the impact of reconnecting with someone through a letter.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So listeners, if you haven't figured this out by now, this is what Amy does, is she handwrites letters. And it started with letters to 530 something friends on Facebook, handwritten letters to each one. And this is what you have a book out, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yep.
About
And
this. And
about the story. Yes.
yes. And I think it's so important for listeners to hear the why behind this. How did this start and what mattered about it? Because so many of us do similar things where we feel so connected to certain people on social media, even though they don't really know us. And what I found is sometimes I'll run into somebody like
Right.
locally
Right.
that I only know on Facebook. And I live in a small town, but I don't know everybody, but I'll run into them locally and they share their life story with me as if I've been following them the way they've been following me. And there is a little danger in that,
Right,
right? Like
right.
to feel so connected to somebody that doesn't really know who you are. Maybe they met you once and then they've been following you on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever. What I love about your story, though, is that kind of random desire. At the time, you thought it was random. We can look back now and say, that's not random. 2014 was when people started really connecting on Facebook and really sharing vulnerably on Facebook to total strangers. And there was like this moment, as far as I can remember, where Facebook changed into this, me, me, me. Look at me. Look at how wonderful my life is. And that's when people started seeing the Facebook perfect or Instagram perfect life and not really understanding what was underneath it. Or they shared so vulnerably, so much that people were totally turned off by it. Like, why are you sharing this with total strangers? And it was in that time period that you realized we are more disconnected by Facebook than connected by Facebook.
Right. And that was beautifully said. And in the timing of that, that's interesting, you know, that you bring that up. And I hadn't really thought about that, about, because you're right, that's when we became like this filtered, perfect oversharing. And then you throw in the 2016 presidential election cycle into the tail of that. And that's when I wrote most of these letters. And then we're polarizing. We're drawing those. I mean, we're depthening those. There's always been lines between us as human beings, but we really got to shovel out and depth of those lines between us. And we were like, look, I can't associate you with you if you dot, 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 don't fit in the box that I need you to fit into, you
right.
know, and that's what made the timing of the letters. And totally, again, non-intentional on my part. I did not set out to do anything. I just set out to be like some crazy person who wants to write people letters, but the meaning, it made the results even more magical. But like you're saying, though, cutting between that, what's reality, the oversharing, the filters, my life is perfect, and the fact that, oh my gosh, I'm going to unfriend you if you voted for fill
right.
in the blank. And
right.
and that's what made, when you combine all of that, and then someone walks out to their mailbox, and there's a letter from someone. And
right.
and a letter is so deliberate, because if you wrote me a letter, then I know what Sarah had to do. Sarah had to find a piece of paper, and then Sarah had to find an envelope, and then a stamp, and then you had to write something down. Like, you had to take the time to do that. And then
right.
it snows in Montana, I'm guessing. You have to get in a car.
Boy, does it.
Yeah. And you have to get a car and drive across Montana. And see, but you would know, literally anywhere in the country, you'd have to find a mailbox and put it in. It is so deliberate. It is so individual that magically, here's what happens. All of a sudden, one, you get a much realer picture of this person, but two, all that stuff that separates us, those big lines, they just start to fade away in light of the fact that Sarah Elkins just treated me like an individual human being. And I had no idea the power that that would unleash on people, you know, that it would just
right.
be this, such a force of good. And then it cuts through too, because you know, when you write a letter, you see crossouts, and unless you're going to start it back over again and again. So what you're talking about,
right.
that filtering, that perfect persona gets blown up, just completely blown up, because you're like, oh my gosh, you can't spell, you know, you can barely write, you know, but that makes people feel, because there's nothing more reassuring than knowing that everyone else is just as messed up as you are.
Yes, absolutely. There's company and comfort.
Yes.
Right? There's comfort in the company, knowing that this person, first of all, sees you, and second of all, has real feelings behind what they're doing, which is what you're saying about making it so deliberate to write a letter. Years ago, I read the book Happy Hour with Einstein, and then Happier Hour with Einstein, written by my dear friend Melissa Hughes. And when I read the books, I happened to be on the board of the Women's Leadership Network here in Helena, Montana. And I said to my committee, my organizing committee for the conference that year, we need to have Melissa Hughes here to talk about how gratitude changes your brain. One of the things she did during we had over 100 people in this conference, which is a lot for a small town in Montana. Over 100 women were in there, and each of us had a thank you note as part of our welcome packet, a blank thank you card. That we were expected to write a thank you note to somebody on that card. At one point during the workshop, she had each of us call somebody that we care about to let them know that we cared about them in that moment. And there were tears. I remember, as one of the organizers and hosts, I was walking around with boxes of Kleenex. Everyone was laughing. I mean, it was so phenomenal. Here's the kicker. She studies neuroscience. And when you hand write a thank you note, you get more of a boost of that oxytocin, that feel-good drug, than the person who receives it.
Right. No, and that is so true. But I tell people this all the time. You know, I was the one, because it's generally accepted that if you write me and tell me that you care about me and value me, that I'm the one who walks away the person most changed. But the reality, and I learned this 580 times, you know, you're the person who's the most changed, the person who is releasing
right
that thank you, that congratulations. Because I went from saying, what am I even going to say in these letters, to being like, once I looked at their profile, then once I realized who they were to me, all of a sudden I had so much stuff to say, thank you, I'm sorry, congratulations, I support you. And I started to see all these things that were going on in people's lives that I couldn't see in the newsfeed, that I had to treat people
right.
one person at a time. And I give a speech about this, which is amazing because it intersects with, I wrote down the name of that book, your friends or your associates speech. Cause we write a letter in my speech. I have cards that say, dear friend, I'm writing you a letter. And we write a letter because, you know, it's like a kickoff. We talk about it and then we do it. And it's the most gratifying thing in the whole world to me, not the speech, but that I'm going to, every right. time I speak about this, you know, 50 to 75 people are going to go write somebody a letter. It's the best
or
thing
more,
ever.
We hope. We hope you get a much bigger audience for this because it's absolutely critical work.
Right.
It's critical work. We need this now more than ever to connect beyond the keyboard. And that's my hashtag for my no longer virtual event is called Connect Beyond the Keyboard. That's my hashtag.
Well, we are the same ilk then, for
well,
sure.
We are. And I think part of what resonates so deeply with me about your stories and about how you're going about this is that back in 2014, 15, 16, I was connecting with these incredible people on LinkedIn. And again, it was before everything shifted to being it's all promotion, it's all marketing, it's all sales. Back then, the only people originally who could blog on LinkedIn were what they called influencers. So it's Richard Branson, right? And
right.
all the big names. And I remember when they released this opportunity for other people to blog, you had to submit a request, an application to blog on LinkedIn, and you had to have a writing sample. And I had been blogging on my own site for a little while. And a handful of us that had been connecting like crazy deep connections in the comment section of the influencers' blogs. Suddenly, a bunch of us had the opportunity to blog for ourselves, and each of us were following the other. So we had this crew of about 20 people or so that were connecting in this very deep and thoughtful way. We had never met ever.
Right, right.
And it was in late 2016 that I finally said, okay, I really want to meet these people in person, because if I'm learning this much about them online through our comments and emails, and sometimes picking up the phone, which again, awesome way to connect.
Right.
People just calling me and saying, hey, you know, we've been connected on LinkedIn. Let's chat. And I remember this moment of thinking, if I've learned this much from these people, just from these interactions, the learning would be exponential if we were in the same room together. And that's when No Longer Virtual was born. And we are getting ready to celebrate our 7th No Longer Virtual in the end of February this year.
Well, congratulations. That is,
thank you.
That is amazing. And it is amazing how our stories intersect, even in the timing, like the time of, and even
yes.
some of the words you used or some of the words I use when I tell my part of a story. But I have found this story has like attracted like so many like-minded people. Like I've connected, and this is a very special connection because I think that there is, but I think it represents a larger human desire, you know, a larger
yes.
human desire to talk about what you're talking about, to talk about what I talk about, you know,
exactly.
because what the basis, there lies so much hope in this. I think we're all so desperate for that. And I think we
yes.
really do represent that, you know, in each other. And that's so important. That's an important component of mental health, first of all. But I mean, in isolation, you know, has, there's so many physical detractors to that. But anyway, yeah, the no longer virtual is, I mean, that's right up my alley for sure.
Yes. I would love to see you there next month. Next month starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're recording this on January 31st for our listeners, just so that you understand that. So Amy, I would like to come back to another story that I'd love to hear you share. And that's you've done lots of public speaking on this topic, on the project that you took on of writing 580 letters to people. So what I'd love to hear is, I know as a speaker myself, it's the moments after my presentation when people come up to me that are most meaningful. I love getting the job. I love engaging the audience. I love hearing the laughter. I love seeing people feel something as I'm sharing things from the stage and having them share things among them, you know, doing workshoppy exercises. The powerful moment, though, is right afterward. And one time I did, just last January, I did a 22 minutes TED-style talk at the Servant Leadership Conference in Fort Worth, Texas. And I had interacted with a woman who was facilitating the sound. She's the one that mic'd me and got me ready. And I had met her the day before. We did a little bit of a practice, you know, like 3 minutes of my presentation. But after that, I stepped off the stage quickly because it was a quick turnaround and I didn't want to take up more time for the next person that was getting on stage. And I got off the stage. It was dark in the room. The lights had gone down and I went beelining for the sound table so I could drop off my mic. And this woman hugged me. She was kind of, you know, ambivalent about me the day before, but she hugged me with this deep heartfelt hug. And she said, "I never thought of my stories that way." And it didn't matter what else happened after that, because to me, that was success. So I would love to hear one of those experiences that you had, or maybe more than one, because I know it's hard to pick one. So.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I had I'm not sure where I was, but I had an older lady come up to me after this talk, and she said that she had grown up on this road somewhere in the Northeast. And it was like a road with like, she must've been 70 or 80 with like 10 people on this road. And it was kind of rural. So it was like their whole community was this road. And she said, you know, I'm going to go home and I'm going to write a letter to each of the kids that lived on that road. And she had tears in her eyes and she kept in touch though. And the best part of the story is after she told me what she was going to do. And she wrote me and told me that she had contacted each of these people after, you know, and reconnected with each of them, you know, and not just, and it was seeing them again as adults. And she was, and it was great because she was kind of, I think she was not aged out of social media, but that wasn't her means, which was kind of even better because she didn't really know. So she tracked these people down and wrote each of them a letter and told them memories of what it was like growing up on that road. And they ended up all getting together are the ones that were alive still. And it was the most gratifying thing.
Amazing.
I think that's one of the most gratifying things that ever happened in my life, you know, and because I get a lot of stories about, you know, other people who write letters, other people who send birthday cards or send thank you cards. And another person, I had a guy come up and tell me that, again, an older gentleman, and he went and made a list. I think this was on his, it's like in the panhandle of Texas. He made a list of the 25 most influential people in his life. And not only did he write them a letter thanking them, he went and hand delivered each one. Like he made a trip out of it. And like he scheduled, like said, "I'm coming. Can I drop this by your house?" And he said, again, I mean, you talk about gratitude, like go next level, write a hand and then show up at these people's house and say, and he said he didn't stay long or unless they asked him, but he said, "I just want you to know, Sarah, you made such a difference in my life. I want you to know that you made enough of a difference. I'm only going to just write you this letter. I'm going to show up at your house and hand it to you."
Wow. That's amazing. So I'd like to keep on this track because this is so meaningful, the impact of what you're doing, what you're sharing, your own experience, but also that of the impact you're having on other people. I'm coming back to this experience I had when my younger son was in high school. I think he was a freshman in high school, and his theater class went to the Montana Historical Society and unearthed letters that had been contributed to the Historical Society from everyday people from the pre-Civil War pioneer days, letters that were written back and forth to family members back east that had made their way to Montana as in the gold rush or as pioneers and homesteaders and freed slaves that wrote back letters and were receiving letters. And they unearthed a bunch of them and they performed them. They had one of the students read the letter as the narrator and a couple of the others maybe act out or recite part of the memorized letter. And I'm telling you, all of us in the audience, they performed it at the Historical Society, one of their meeting rooms, and all of us were just silent. You could have heard a pin drop in that room. And I asked my son why that was meaningful to him. And he said, "Well, because these were real people. These weren't celebrities that we were learning about. This wasn't history told by the person who led the army. It wasn't history told by a historian looking back. It was history told by a person who was experiencing it at that time. So
wow.
Here you are telling these stories, and granted, most of us over 50 have written handwritten letters for our lives. Maybe we stopped after we left our homes and stopped writing thank you notes, courtesy of our mother saying, write a thank you note right now.
Right.
You have to write a thank you note to your Aunt Judy because she sent you this gift or whatever. I think a lot of us have kind of put that by the wayside. And, but it's those people under 50 that I'm seeing the impact as well. People who show up for No Longer Virtual because they really want to connect beyond the keyboard. But also, like my younger son who did this experiment or theater program, he went to visit my mom. He's 22 now, and he was 20, and he took this long road trip out west and stopped overnight for a couple nights with my mom. When he left, not only did he strip the bed that he slept in, he left her a note.
Wow.
And so I would love to hear, and I can tell you, it meant something to him to leave the note because he knew what it would mean to her. Wasn't like, I'm going to do this because it's going to boost my oxytocin. It was like, Bubby will really appreciate this.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that when my mom called me, she said, Max left 15 minutes ago and I already miss him. I'm like, yeah, I know. Tell me about it. He's not
right.
at home.
Right.
But then she said, Sarah, he stripped the bed. And I said, yes. And he said, and she said, and he left me a note. And I said, well, yeah. And she said, don't well, yeah, me. That's not typical. I said, well, it's typical of Max.
Right. Right.
So
wow.
Yes, exactly. And my older son, as soon as he receives something, a gift in the mail or money through Venmo from one of us, we get a thank you text immediately. Not the same thing as a handwritten note. And yet that acknowledgement, that immediate recognition of gratitude, right?
Right, right.
So I would love to hear a story of where that was the impact, that you saw it generationally. Do you have a story like that that you could share?
That I saw the meaning of the letter writing generationally, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, what was your experience with that? Have you seen it cross generations, or is
oh,
it really majority of older people 50 and up?
No, you know, and that's a great, because when I did the, you know, letter writing project, my oldest son was in high school. And so, you know, and so I was like in his church group. I was like a, you know, the crazy mom who was one of the leaders who wasn't mature enough to be in the church group. But I was
oh my
there.
Gosh, you are speaking my language, Amy.
Nonetheless, I was invited to be a part of it. And so I was friends with these kids. You know, it's all about relationships. And so they got letters, and it was the first letter any of them had ever received in their lives, you know, and it's funny how there's these two kids from that church group who I have not so much stayed in touch with, but through the journey of the book, and I still write, I don't know if you know this from my bio, I still write two probably cards or letters every morning. That's the first thing I do when I get up every morning. So they're two of the kids that I've kept up with because they graduated from college and they've, you know, I wrote them the initial letter and one of them wrote me back, the other didn't. But then I've sent them birthday cards or cards about, you know, congratulations and on this or whatever, all based on the letter writing experience. Both of them, one lives in Minnesota and one lives in Ohio. Both of them, I received one of them, saved the date for their wedding invitation yesterday. And
wow.
He wrote on the back, hope you can come, Miss Amy. I mean, I haven't seen this kid since 2016 when he graduated from high school, but that's the power. And they still, in one of them, I sent a postcard when Dear Dana, the book came out to all the 580 people who received the letter. Cause I felt like that was like circling back and all were handwritten.
Right.
It wasn't like the book's coming out, it was all I handwrote on every card. And that kid's written me back every time I've written him. So here's a kid who is 25 years old, you know, and I would assume that maybe he does it in his outside world, you know,
and not just for you. Right.
Right. Right. But I think that to your point, though, if we set that example, they will engage it. My kids do. My younger son, who lived with me through the whole, I mean, he lived with us. He was at home through the whole process, the book and the letters and everything, was there when I mailed the last letter. I mean, he lived the entire thing. He leaves me notes. He, like your son, he writes when he does a card, and he's the most non-emotional kid I have. But he, when a cousin graduates, he writes on both sides of the card and he writes a very meaningful, emotional message. But I think it is about an example. It is about light, shining a light, you know, and there's probably 30 high school kids I wrote in the project. So I'd like to think that has impact, you know, beyond the letter writing project.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Amy, you're just, I've gotten chills a couple times during our conversation. And that was one 10 years later, he's 25 years old and he's writing notes and inviting you to his wedding. Like that is just a phenomenal connection. And can you imagine if we all did that, how modeling that behavior? I just this morning, as I was getting out of bed, I have one of these, I won't call it a vision board, but it's like a poster that I made in early January with a group of women that I meet with pretty regularly. And on, I keep looking at it every morning. I want to see if this works because I've always kind of poo-pooed this idea.
Right.
But every morning I get up, it's on the mirror in my bedroom. I look at it every day, right attached to it. I actually stuck with tape a note that my brother had left on a little tiny sticky note the last time he came to visit. It is that he just left. I don't remember where he left it. And I have another one from him from when I visited him in Denver and he snuck like two different notes or three different little sticky notes in my suitcase in my backpack. And I don't find them right away.
That's incredible.
And I look at this and I have one from my mom. This has been a tradition in my family. My mom that used to, she was a baby nurse. And so she would get all of these fun swag from pharmaceutical companies that relating to like diaper cream and formula and all that stuff.
Right.
Well, she had these baby bottle sticky notes from one of the formula companies. And this has to be, she's been retired for years. She left one in my bathroom cabinet in behind the mirror years ago, probably 10 years ago. And when we changed over that bathroom cabinet, I moved it. I put it into the new bathroom cabinet.
Yeah.
And I still, every morning when I open that cabinet, I still see it. And it's like 10 years old.
Yeah. And that's just an incredible example of the power of it is a handwritten thing. I mean, you know, the handwritten thing, absolutely. The handwriting is somebody's personality, but it's the physical manifestation of how somebody feels about you and how it made you feel. And you know, when there is a the Dana and now we're best friends, but we went on like a 17 stop book tour after the book came out.
And two of you together.
Right. Right. And that's a beautiful turn in the story.
Another chill.
I wrote the book and then I was like, I was going to let her read it first. And I did because of Parker's part of the story. And I gave her a red pen because she had to be super brave. And I didn't want to, because now I'm best friends with her. And I mean, all it is, I mean, all that grief, you don't want to hurt your friend, you know? So she read it.
Of course not. You have to acknowledge her role in the story.
Right. And she was like, I'm 100%, don't change anything. And I was like, do you want to go sign books? She was like, absolutely. Let's go on a book tour. And we both get up and talk about it. We both read out of the book together. I mean, it was a beautiful experience, but over and over again, people showed up at these events and they brought their letter to the event like they were a rock star. Like, look, guys, I got a letter.
I'm one of those 580 letters.
Right. I had pins made and you had a pin that said, I received a Facebook letter. And these people pranced around like they were the best and the most
That's
common
amazing.
Response I got from the letter. And we're talking about some random people. Some of these people, just think about your Facebook list. I wrote every single one of them. And they were like, the most common response I got from people was, I will save your letter in a special place in my home for the rest of my life.
Oh.
That's like a mic drop. And for 66 cents in like 15 minutes, guys, we have an opportunity to blow it up. And I went into this not having any idea, and I wasn't intentional. I wasn't like, look at me, and I'm going to go change the world. I wasn't like in a white dress, you know, in a field going, God, what do I do? I wasn't doing none of that. I was just trying to stay married and not mess my kids up. You know, that's all I was doing in the story. You know, I was wearing sweatpants.
That's a quote right there.
Yeah, that's right. I was wearing sweatpants and, you know, and so but the thing is, I learned letter by letter, friend by friend, the power that being intentional has. And it's so non-intrusive because you send it and no one, you don't feel like you have to reply. And no one even knows if you read it. It's the most magical thing. And that's why. And if you had told me 5 years ago, I would stand on top of a building to talk about this. I would do whatever anybody wanted me to do if I could talk about my story, because it has the power to change where we are as a human race right now. It absolutely has the power to make a difference in this divisiveness that we're experiencing.
Oh, and it's here. All these ideas are flying through my head right now. I so appreciate everything you're saying here. And I'm thinking about all the times I received handwritten notes and how I've written things without really thinking about it as an intention. Like when our band performs and we get paid with a check, I'm the one that cashes it and distributes the money. I go to the bank and I get envelopes, you know, the bank envelopes. And on the backs, I write the person's name, and I might do it in big bubble letters, or I'll do it in some fancy cursive and put hearts on it or music notes. Oh. And now, like, I'm thinking about that, like, oh my gosh, that really is meaningful. And
super
it's so
meaningful.
Easy. Our listeners, you have an opportunity here. You have an opportunity here. It doesn't have to be a letter with a stamp. It can be a note to your kid that you put on the mirror in the bathroom for when they wake up. It could be a sticky note on your husband's favorite candy bar. Sneaky, put it on his desk.
Right.
It could be a Shutterfly image that you send in a card. You don't even have to actually mail it. You just take a picture of you with your friend and put a little note in it and ship it through Shutterfly for $3. Like, all these ideas are flying through my head.
Yeah, it's off the charts. And I think that, you know, I mean, like you said, the leaving the little notes for people, and it's whatever, you know, I think what we try to do is try to put everyone else in our own box, like whatever it is that you feel like and that you're inspired to do. Like, I was inspired to do that. That's fine. But everyone's inspired to do something. Like, they have a moment in their heart where they're like, oh, that's what I want to do. We got to encourage each other to do that. And as far as letter writing, to me, you can have the exact same impact, like you said, on a sticky note, or get a card and write two sentences. It doesn't have to be a two-page letter. It doesn't have to have a stamp on it, like you said. It just has to be full of love and whatever your heart told you to do. Well, then go for it. And if we all encourage each other to do that, then we're one step closer to being where we know we can be, you know, 100%.
Oh my gosh. When I sent my boys off to camp when they were little, I sent them with pre-addressed postcards with stamps on them, right?
Yeah.
And that's what my mom did for me when I went to camp when I was a kid.
Me too.
And what I said to the boys was, you don't have to write a letter. This leaves only enough space for a few sentences. That way you're more likely to do it. Don't give yourself a huge page of white paper, clean paper, if you are overwhelmed thinking about filling that paper. Give yourself a sticky note. Give yourself a postcard.
Right. Right. Give yourself a little card from Target. It all has the same impact. And there's one person who's going to write 17 pages in 16 different gel pens. The other person can get it done with a pencil in six words.
On a sticky note.
right. Or however you do it. But it all has the same impact, because what it says is, you matter to me enough to do this. And that's the secret sauce right there. You met like, and it can be, like you said, thank you, congratulations, I'm thinking of you, have a great day, whatever it is. You know, the Dana, which is a real person, like I said, and she comes to my house now, there are three sticky notes in this house right now that no one has taken down. In she put the sticky notes up in the fall. One's on my husband's mirror, and it says, thanks for putting up with all my shenanigans, because as it turns out,
the two
Dana
of you
and I
are still loud.
Yeah, we're loud. And her husband tells me all the time, Amy Daughters, I liked it better when you were in my mailbox, because we're so loud and out of control. But there's one, and then there's one in the guest room that no one's taken down, that she put for the guests behind her, that said, make today a great day. And there's one on the monitor that I'm looking at you, and it says, you, Amy, are making a difference in the world. And that will never come off my monitor, you know. And that's the same girl who I stalked online, you know, in 2014.
Well, and given her grief, the fact that she can be in that place now, I'm just Like my eyes are filled with tears right now. Our listeners can't see us, but listeners, just so you know, my eyes are tearing up right now thinking about the grief she experienced and the life she's living now in Parker's honor.
Right.
Right.
And for me, Sarah, this will always go back to the single, because when I went to write the book and I like talked to book people, they were like, is it two stories? Like, is it the Facebook letters and the Dana's letters? And I was like, no, because there's not one letter without Parker. There's not one letter. There's not one podcast. There's not one speech. There's not one thing without Parker, without Dana and Parker. That's where this all starts, you know? And so I'm a part of this legacy, even though I never met Parker, you know, or I haven't met him on this side of the
whole
deal yet.
Well, you're continuing his legacy of love and you're honoring that.
Right. And yeah, what an honor.
Well, and I have to give a shout out to my friend Rich Gasson, who he's in Madison, Wisconsin, and he made special thank you cards for the last no longer virtual event, which was in Chicago, and he got to attend it. And he had been wanting to come for years, and he finally went, made it to the sixth one. And he distributed these thank you cards to every person, all 25 people who attended that conference. And we talked about writing notes and what that means, and especially particularly thank you cards. And it's funny because one of our dear friends said, I always want to do it. I always think about it, but I live in a town without a post office, or, you know, a little tiny limited hour post office. And I keep forgetting to get stamps. Like, I have this idea that I want to do it, but I keep forgetting to get stamps. And three of us sent her stamps within about 6 weeks of the conference, just randomly in a thank you card, thanks to Rich Gasson. We all sent her stamps, so she has plenty of stamps to write cards now. There's no excuse. And again, a shout out to Melissa Hughes, who started this whole thing, at least with me and our no longer virtual community of professionals. So last story as we wrap this up and come back around to your statistics. When you think about that little girl sorting your cards and understanding what an RBI is, think about the statistics of what you're doing now and the ripple factor, the ripple effect of those 580 letters. What does that little girl see in that now?
I think little Amy, wow, that's a great question. I love the way you tied it back to, I don't know, anyone else, Sarah? We've only met for 40 minutes, but who would have tied this back into baseball statistics, RBI and feelings all in one sentence? I love it. I think she would be just like her older counterpart. I think she'd be overwhelmed, and I think she didn't know what an Excel spreadsheet is, but she would want to put all the letters out to visualize, you know, what we'd done, you know. And I think I'm like everyone else in the world. I hope my younger self, and I've never thought about this, would be super proud and overwhelmed of, you know, and humbled by the Facebook letter writing project. And I would love to get her take on it with her bowl cut and her, you know, she'd want to do some physical representation of it so she could do like a graph or something and show how it worked. But I'd like to think she, and that's a pretty humbling thing, I'd like to think she'd be pretty proud of, you know, where that turned. Yeah, that'd be one of the things she'd be pleased about. So.
Well, and I'm a very practical person, and it may not seem like it based on the work that I do, but I'm highly practical. The reason I took on StrengthsFinder to become a certified coach in that is because I understand the statistics and math behind the accuracy of this assessment. It's all about the practicality of being able to improve communication at work.
Right.
So
right.
When I think about that, that's where I see you bringing together the statistics with understanding, being able to tell the story through the statistics.
Right,
And back and forth, right? Telling the statistics through the story.
Right. And I have a great, your viewers can't see this, but this is my infographic on the Facebook project. So it's like the Facebook project.
Hold it right
the
there. I'm going to take a screenshot so that we can include it in the show notes associated with this podcast and smile. There. All right. I'll share that in the podcast show notes.
Yeah. So Yeah, I'm a numbers girl. I'll always be a numbers girl. And I write about sports. That's the other thing I do. And that's why I write about statistics. So numbers is my
Isn't
things.
that funny? I mean, I
Yeah.
didn't even know what you do now in terms of statistics and math. And then you hold up this infographic, which is exactly what I was sharing about, like how those things come together. I love
Right.
it. That's
Right. And
perfect.
little Amy would have loved the infographics. She didn't know what infographics were, but she would have been all about it. So,
Well, I don't think any of us really did back in the 70s.
yeah, exactly.
My gosh, Amy, this has been such a treat and a total wild card for me. Your publicity folks that are encouraging you to get onto podcasts, they're the ones that reached out to me.
Right.
And all I had to do was read that submission about what you've done and what you're doing and where this is going with your speaking and the potential for the ripple effects of our listeners hearing this story. That's all it took for me to jump in. And I'm just grateful for you for having spent this time with me. And again, for the impact you're making and the huge ripple effect that you'll never really know.
Right. And I appreciate that. And those are very generous words. And I just want to say today for me will always be the day that no longer virtual, cross paths with dear Dana, dear friend is what I called the speech. But, and I think that's a great day. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate everything you're doing. And I think we're of the same ilk, like I said. And it's an honor to talk to you and to talk to your audience. And thank you for letting me share Dana and I's story with your audience. It's, that's what it's all about for me. So thank you.
It is my pleasure. Listeners, it's your turn. Remember that title, Your Stories Don't Define You, But How You Tell Them Will. What are the stories that people can tell about you based on what you take from this conversation? Think about the stories that people are telling about Dana and Parker and about Amy that they'll never know. And yet continue to create this ripple effect of connecting beyond the keyboard, connecting authentically in a way that makes people feel seen and heard. What will you do? What is your next step? I would love to hear your thoughts about this in the comments. Thanks again, Amy.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.